Next step, number 682, July 1st, 2021.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. We reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Okay, listen carefully, okay? Dalmatic. Do you know what a dalmatic is? No, not a dalmatic. No. Don't anglicize it. Dalmatic. What is a dalmatic? Well, if you are a student of the Divine Liturgy, according to Archbishop Diron Nersoyan, who back in the 1950s, 1950s, what is that, 70 years ago, wrote the perennial Divine Liturgy translation. Yes, every Divine Liturgy translation adopts from his work back in 1950. According to Archbishop Diron, the dalmatic is what the deacons wear or the priest wears and under his vestments. In other words, the shirt. Dalmatic. Okay, so you look it up. Look it up. In fact, do a Google search for it. And at least on my end, when I did a Google search for dalmatic, the first thing that came up was an assortment of pictures from different clergy. What do they call them? Different clergy. clergy supply. Clergy supply stores that had dalmatics. Shirts. And I was intrigued by this word back in 1989, and I remember specifically finding it, and I was with a friend, and we were talking about the dalmatic, because, you know, as a young priest, you're intrigued with all the nuances of the church, and you want to find out exactly, well, it's not really a shirt. In Armenian, we call it the shabik, which translates in colloquial Armenian into the shirt. And yeah, it is the shirt underneath. Underneath the vestments, there's a white shirt that you wear, but it has a specific name, dalmatic. And I remember back then, you know, being intrigued by, wow, this is a cool word. As well as a lot of other words. If you open up the Divine Liturgy book, you find all kinds of different words that express and explain different parts of the liturgy. Synaxis, wow. The Eucharist. Well, Eucharist we've kind of gotten used to, right? But anyway, these all have Greek origins, and of course it goes back to the early forms where you have the Greek liturgy. And you start thinking, well, wait a minute, hold it one second. Didn't we once upon a time say that the Armenians were the first? So why are we adapting from the Greeks? Like, if you read some of my stuff, I make a conscious decision of not referring to Saint Mary as Theotokos. And everyone in all Orthodox theology refers to her as Theotokos. The Theo being God, Theotokos, the mother of God. And we in the Armenian language have a beautiful word called Astvazadzin, the bearer of God, or the one from whom God was born, or very simply, Astvazamayr, the mother of God, Theotokos. So why are we appealing to the Greek word when we have a word ourselves? Now, this is not about Greek and Armenian, but this is about, basically, why are we trying to complicate something that really needs to be refined and gotten down to a basic. understanding. Yeah, you know, like, why not just say I'm wearing a shirt instead of we have to go get a dalmatic? Ah, you think it's not important. Well, you know what? It is. Because this is what's connected to the relevance of our church on a daily life. If I tell you what I went through today, I had to drive out and give somebody last rites. Had to watch someone as they moved from this life to the next. This last rites that I had to give, as we call it, it's very, we have other assortment of names, but again, I'm just going to refer to it as last rites. In other words, the last of the rites that this person will receive, was I had to administer in the middle of a week where I've had three funerals I've had to officiate. And it has not let up since the beginning of the year. What is today? July 1st. We are ready to start the second half of 2021. Can you believe? Half of the year is already over. And if you, I did a quick calculation. I've done more funerals this past half year than I've done in any other year in my ministry. So it's tolling, it's grueling. And, you know, like I said, three funerals and then on top, what was that movie? Three funerals and a wedding, or three weddings and a funeral? Something like that. Okay, I had three funerals and a last rite. How about that? And, you know, it gets to you. It gets to you as a human being, as much as you understand your place in that process. You can't help but contemplate or think about matters of life and death for your own self and for the loved ones, and what it means to pass on from this life. And I know this is like the basic question: what happens after this life? Now, I want to take a small little break right here and put a little, a bookmark in this, okay? And I'm going to just tell you in a couple of moments, we'll come back to this bookmark, okay? But yesterday I was interviewed on a podcast. A young man, deacon of our church, is starting a podcast. And as soon as it's available, I'm going to share it with you. I'll make sure that we put a link on our show notes when it becomes available, hopefully next week, to his entire podcast, because it was interesting. I was interviewed, and it was an opportunity for me to think about questions, as any good interview. It was spontaneous, it was candid, and he came up with a question that I told him, I said, this is going to bother me because I've got to think about it. But he asked me, you've been a priest for almost 40 years. So is there something that you, knowing today, would tell that person 40 years ago? And I don't exactly know. I'm paraphrasing the idea because I don't have a copy of the interview. I will once it gets out, but basically, it's like, what would you tell the young seminarian, the young man who was ordained almost 40 years ago, knowing what you know now? And it stumped me. It stumped me because I don't know. I really don't know what I would tell myself if I had that chance. First of all, yeah, I love the question for a couple reasons. It gets me to think. But the bigger reason, it has to do with space-time relations. And you guys know that. You know that I love that kind of stuff, right? It's like being in a wormhole and you go back and you say, oh, there's myself 40 years ago. And let me go and instruct myself. And what would you be? Well, it's the time travel conundrum, right? I'm sure you've heard this, but, you know, is it possible to travel in time? Well, it would be, provided that you do not make changes in what happened in the past. In fact, I think that the what was that movie? What was it called? Back to the Future. That was a really good one. I only saw the first one of that series. I've always had in my mind that I want to go back and watch number two and number three. But the first one, it dealt with these kind of issues. So the grandfather riddle or conundrum is that if you go back in time and find your grandfather, okay, and you were to cause his death, what would happen to you? Would you immediately vanish? Because if there's no grandfather to have your father, there would be no father to have you, and then you'd be out of it, right? So it's kind of one of those nice little brain teasers that gets you to think about the continuity of life, the continuum. But it goes back to this question. And you know what? It bothered me. It bothered me because I don't know what I would say to myself. So how about if I save that for the second portion of today's show? I want to talk to you about that. But in the midst of all of this, we did this this podcast last night, and it gave me a chance to reflect and to think, and I want to share that with you. But let's go back to the dogmatic issue, okay? Why do we complicate things? Why do we complicate something that is so simple as the Lord Jesus Christ sitting with his disciples and saying, take and eat, this is my body. Take and drink, this is my blood shed for the new covenant. And giving them the bread and the wine and saying, this is my body, this is my blood. And do this in remembrance of me. And because of that simple commandment, every Sunday, since that time, the Christian community, the Christian church, has gotten together and celebrated the Eucharist, or the divine liturgy. In other words, there's liturgies, this is the divine liturgy. Or in Armenian, the Badarak. Beautiful word. Literally means sacrifice. The sacrifice. What was the ultimate sacrifice? It was on Calvary, Jesus shedding his blood, Jesus giving his life. And we have the Badarak every Sunday to recount not only that act of sacrifice of our Lord, but also to celebrate his resurrection. So pretty basic ideas if you think about it, but what do? We complicate it by using terms that are really kind of archaic, the dogmatic. Yeah? Okay, it's the technical word. Like I said, look it up. I'll put it on our show notes, okay? Do a Google search. Do your own research on this, because it's interesting what it'll yield. But you say, well, in a world that's so complicated, why are we dealing with things like this? I mean, it's not just the shirt. I mean, it's everything. It's all the regalia. Think about all the vestments. You walk into a church and here's a priest. I mean, I've seen some really far out ones, you know, where they've got the hats and they've got the crowns and they've got the things. And you look at the vestments and you say, what does this have to do with life? And that's the point. That's the point of what the vestments were all about in the first place. It was to signal that when you come into church and you're seeing this man is vested for a very special service, it's exactly like the Thanksgiving meal that you have with your family, right? You don't show up off the street. No, you wash up, you get ready, you dress differently, and you celebrate the Thanksgiving meal. Well, in the same sense, and when you go to Grandma's house for Thanksgiving, she's dressed up differently too, right? She's got the apron, her hair is up, she's not screaming and yelling. In fact, she is making the turkey very nice. And I'm using the Thanksgiving metaphor because it's an easy one. I'll put a link on today's show notes to my Thanksgiving message about the divine liturgy. But it's a simple metaphor, okay? But think of it this way. From the early times when Christians got together, they would celebrate the Holy Eucharist, or they would celebrate the divine liturgy, and it became too familiar. So what happens when something becomes familiar? It breeds contempt. People were contemptuous. You would come into a church, and the way the original Eucharist was, or the Divine Liturgy was celebrated, there would be a common table, and everyone would sit around that table, and the leader, the priest, the bishop, whoever it was, the clergyman of the time, would take the bread and say, take and eat, would take the wine and say, take and drink. This is the blood of the new covenant, and basically reenact the Last Supper in accordance with Jesus's wishes and command that do this in remembrance of me. Okay, so we've done that for maybe 10 years. 15 years, 20 years, how about 100 years? How about 200 years? And it becomes so commonplace that it misses or it loses its holiness. So through the centuries, when you think about it, why is the altar facing away from the people? Yeah, I know. We come up with nice little statements. Well, it's facing the east and there's the light. But traditionally, from the old times, it was just a common table with, think about something we all have seen, Da Vinci's Last Supper. You see Jesus right in the center, and around the table are his disciples. And basically, that's what the early Christian church did. They would sit there with the priest and the congregation around a common table until it became so familiar that it breeded contempt, and people, they needed to make it sacred. So they elevated the altar. They put it up on a stage. Okay, we call that the bema, the stage, okay? And in my pet peeve, when especially with deacons, working with deacons, the deacons say, I'm serving on the altar. No, you're not. You're serving on the bema. You're serving at the altar. But the altar is that structure on top of the bema, on top of the stage. So if you're saying, I am serving on the altar, it means you are standing up there on that structure, on that altar. No, you're not. You're standing on the stage or the bema. So when you look at it that way, you see the reason for moving the altar up, moving it facing away from the people, was because people were too familiar with it. Now, you look at what Vatican II did for the Roman Catholic Church. This is 1964. 1964, they wanted to make it more accessible. They turned the altar around. Yeah, so the priest faces the people, more in tune with what the original Last Supper was like. In fact, in the Episcopal Church, the Anglican Church, they've done the same, with the exception of a few congregations that have not gone with the flow. One of which we know very closely, the St. Mark Community Episcopal Church in Glendale. I've had the good fortune of being friends with the priest there, and you go into their church and the altar is facing the east and the priest has his back to the people, much like we do in the Armenian church. But the reason for this was because it was too accessible, so they wanted to separate it. And for so long, I think this is one of the problems that we have today, because for so long what we did is we kept separating it. We had the priest wearing vestments to identify him as something different from daily life. And what has come to haunt us now in the 21st century is finding relevance with all of this. Sometimes you see these priests and what they're doing and what they're wearing, and you say, okay, now how is that relevant with my life today? Which is a legitimate question that I think is as legitimate as Jesus Christ when he asked, you know, like, don't you know that if you understood what my Father meant, that I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would understand what's going on. Well, in the same way, where is the compassion? Where's the mercy when we're standing up there with egos going on, like who has the most shiny vestment, who has the most shiny ornaments on there? And yes, you could be the most humble of servants. With all due respect, you can be the humblest, but it gets to you when you're standing there, elevated, a bit off from everyone else, and talking to them. And you say, where's the humility? Where is the Christian virtues that we have been taught? Well, legitimate questions. It's been separated. And for this reason, it's very important that when we look at divine liturgy texts or trying to learn it ourselves, that we begin with the fundamental of what is the purpose? What is the purpose of the divine liturgy? Simple question, right? Well, it's got a simple answer. It's to recount. It's to remember. It's to remind. It's to bring us to the understanding that our Lord Jesus Christ gave this sacrifice so that we too may sacrifice. So yes, we do that in the reenactment of the divine liturgy, but it has to move over to our daily lives, so that what we do on Sunday in church will impact the world. Otherwise, what's the sense of it? Really, ask yourself, what's the sense of doing it on Sunday morning if there's going to be no impact to the world today? And you say, well, that's not fair. We do it because it's beautiful. Okay, think of it this way. What was the original Badalak? What was the original liturgy? It was Jesus Christ sacrificing himself on the cross. What is the sense of all of that if it doesn't impact the guy on the street? It's not just a story. No, it impacts every one of us. The sense of that act was that it gave us salvation. It gave us a means to get to the Father and to be united with all eternity. It gives us a means. In the same way, when we get together in church for the divine liturgy, it's not to set us apart, but to give us a means to meet God. And yeah, we do have all this, and it's important. We do have all these barriers. We have all these layers, such as the dalmatic, such as the beard, such as the crowns and all the vestments, which are beautiful, but they do play into the trappings. And we are at a point right now where, just as in the past when they had moved the altar away from the people, we are at a point where people are asking, can we bring it back? Can we get close? Metaphorically, of course, no one's asking, no one cares. But they're asking, metaphorically, people are asking, where does that church meet, intersect with my life today? Okay, that's part one. I'll give you a little bit of something to think about as we take a break right now for the song of the day. And when we return, I'm going to go to some more personal issues, but we'll be hitting this entire question of the dalmatic and what it means to us today. Right now, here's today's song. Enjoy.
In Paris, France, reading the news and it sure looks bad. They won't give peace a chance. That was just a dream some of us had. Still a lot of lines to see, but I wouldn't want to stay here. It's too old and cold and settled in its ways here. Oh, but California, California, coming home. I'm gonna see the folks I dig. I'll even kiss a sunset peak. California, I'm coming home. I met a redneck on a Grecian Isle, who did the goat dance very well. He gave me back my smile, but he kept my camera to sell. Oh, the rogue, the red, red rogue. He cooked good omelettes and stews, and I might have stayed on with him there, but my heart cried out for you. California, oh, California, coming home. Oh, make me feel good, rock and roll band. I'm your biggest fan, California, coming home. The streets are full of strangers, all the news on your ears just give you the blues, just give you the blues. So I bought me a ticket, I caught a plane to Spain. To a party down a red dirt road. There were lots of pretty people there, reading Rolling Stone, reading Vogue. I said, how long can you hang around? I said, a week, maybe two, just until my skin turns brown. And I'm going home to California, California, coming home. Oh, will you take me as I am, strung out on another man? California, I'm coming home. Oh, it gets so lonely when you're walking and the streets are full of strangers. All the news at home you read, more about the war and the bloody changes. Oh,
when you hear that, aren't you just happy that you were born when you were born, that we had such great music as this? Joni Mitchell, of course, celebrating 50 years of the album Blue, which came out 50 years ago this week, June 22nd, 1971. Apparently, when it first came out, it didn't receive the kind of recognition it has now on its second launching at the 50th anniversary commemorative album. It is, I think it went right to the top of the charts the week that it came out, last week. But this particular album, Blue, and we just heard the song California, which I'm partial to, of course. This album, Blue, has held its own through the years. Last year, Rolling Stone's list of 500 greatest albums of all time, it was rated at number 3. And NPR, just a few years back, named it one of the greatest, actually the greatest album of all time made by a woman. So listen to it. I'll have a link on today's show notes. You can never get enough Joni Mitchell. Listen to it and make it part of your repertoire, if it's not already. We're talking about time travel? No, that's not really. It creeped up into it, but we're talking about relevance, as we always do. What does all of this have to do? What does the Bible, our church, our understanding of God have to do with our lives today? And it's an important question. One that kind of hit me yesterday off guard. I was being interviewed for a podcast, deacon named David Mady, And it's going to be out next week, I believe, and we'll get it out to you. Of course, if I like it. No, we'll put it out. But it is an intimate interview with me. So I was very intrigued with his last question. He said, now that you've been a priest for almost 40 years, what advice would you give that younger self of you? What advice would you give? And my first thought was that Zen answer. You know, in Buddhism, there's that answer. If you see the Buddha on the road, kill him. This is actually a title of a book back, I would say, mid-70s when I read it. And I always remember it. It's an important statement. In fact, a couple of years ago, I know that there was this young seminarian from St. Narcisse, and we were traveling together to an assignment, and we were in the car, and he said, you know, I guess I'm getting into that Yoda mood, you know, like, or people look at me, and I guess the white hair and the frizziness of it kind of gives you that appearance that, like, you might know something. You know, so, like, he didn't say, oh, great master or anything like that, but he did ask me, he says, what advice would you give me? So, basically, that same question that was asked of me last night, he was asking me, what advice would I give myself in a different form? Here was this young guy. He was a seminarian from St. Narcisse, the Armenian seminary back east. And when he asked me that, I didn't even hesitate. I'll never forget. We were in the car. And I said, it's not for me to give you advice. And I shared with him this Buddhist saying. If you see the Buddha on the road, kill him. Oh, that's very harsh. What do you mean kill him? Well, I don't mean kill him. I don't mean that you see anybody and kill him. But basically, life is up to each and every one of us to unfold as we work out our own situation, our own circumstances. It's not up for me. He doesn't need to live up to my standards. And yes, I may know some things more than he does because I've been around a little bit longer. But in the same breath, or with the same breath, I have to say that he knows so much more than I do. Why? Well, because he's got a fresh start. I mean, think about all the times you've been slapped and you've lost hope. Or why would I want to impose that negativity on somebody else? As positive as I may try to be, I still come in with some baggage, don't I? We all do. If you live, you've got some baggage. There's stuff that comes with you. So why not allow somebody to make their own mistakes? To fall off a few ladders so they know how it feels. Yeah, we all know if you get up on the top of a ladder and you jump off, you're going to hurt yourself. But you don't know how you're going to hurt yourself. You don't know what it feels like until you do it once. Think about something as simple as learning about heat, right? You put your hand on the stove and it burns. And you retract your hand immediately. The learning process tells you that you may want to experiment possibly one more time. But once you get burnt once, you're not going to put your hand back up on that stove. You know that that is a burning reaction. You don't want to do that. But at some point, you need to do it. As much as you tell a child, don't do this, don't do that, don't touch the stove, you know that that don't is going to be a reason for experimentation. What could there be over there? What could be on that stove? Let me see. And oh, it burned. I'm not going to touch it anymore. And in life, you know, this is one of the beautiful things about life. And so what would I tell myself? I don't know. I really don't know. I do know that as a priest, it is perhaps one of the most rewarding experiences in anybody's life. Oh, there's so many frustrations. So many frustrations. But they don't even stack up next to all of the wonderful things that happen as a priest. And I think I feel that even more this year because of the high volume of funerals we've had to do because of COVID, yes. It's given me a chance to be with families at a very intimate level, to talk with them, to share with them. And, you know, they refer to the priesthood as a profession from cradle to grave, where they're from the cradle through baptism, through marriage to the grave. We're there with the family. And I was very humbled this past week when a family called me to do the funeral. And the father said exactly that. He made me realize that. So this is all coming like together. And he said, you know, you baptized our children, you married our children, and now that my wife has died, I want you to be there for the funeral. And it's really humbling. It's sobering because you realize that this is a life and your life is touching others and their lives are touching yours. Just as I told you today, I've gotten back from giving somebody last rites. And yeah, that's a blessing for her. But you can't imagine the blessing it was for me. A blessing to me, why? Because I'm there at a very difficult time with the family to hold hands, to read the scriptures, to read the words of Christ saying, "Peace I leave you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go, I will come back to take you with me." And for that family to have that assurance that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, has touched their mother in such a way that she can let go at this point without any fear, because the creator of the universe is with her. Think about that for a moment. And you have that opportunity to usher in this beautiful narrative and this story. So what would I tell myself 40 years ago if I could? Probably nothing. Probably nothing. Just go and experiment. Go and try it. You're going to make mistakes, and Lord knows how many I've made. But each one of those mistakes gives me a chance, right, to brush it up a bit. Gives me a chance to really reflect and say, wow, that was a mistake. I can't do it again. And so you go through life. Yeah, you fall off ladders. You touch the stove. It hurts. And each one of those are learning experience. Now, there is a risk that goes with that, and that needs to be talked about because it's a serious, serious risk. So yesterday, in the midst of everything that's going on, this series of events unfolded. And I'm going to share with you what happened. Of course, not revealing any of the names, but I do want to share it with you because it does point to God's intervention in our lives, but not in the way that you're familiar with. It's not like this causal relationship where, you know, you go and you pray and God says, okay, I'm going to come down now and do something. But it's the openness that we have to perceive God's presence, to perceive the goodness, to perceive the fullness of God interacting with our lives. Okay, let me get to the meat of what happened. Okay, in the middle of everything that's going on, yesterday morning I was at a meeting at the diocese, and I get a text from one of our ladies who we work very closely on social issues. And she said, "Can you take a call?" And I was in a meeting. I said, "In 15 minutes, you know, call me." And I had finished my meeting, and I went outside of the building to make this call. You know, so I'm on my cell phone and making this call. And somebody comes right behind me. And I hung up the cell phone. I hung up, you know, calling back this lady, because I hadn't seen this other lady for a few months. She had gone through the tragedy of tragedies, loss of a child to drug addiction. And it was devastating. It was devastating not only to her, but to our entire community. And we went through that a couple of years ago. It still bothers me until today, because these are young lives that are being lost, that are being wasted because of the profits that these people are making. So this lady came, "How are you doing?" And we talked a little bit. It was really nice. You know, we hadn't talked in a couple months. Happened to be there to say a prayer and took the opportunity to say hello and everything. So now I'm delayed on that phone call, so I make the phone call now. And the lady I'm talking to over the phone says, "I need some help. So-and-so has OD'd on narcotics. We need to get him into a rehab." Wow. Like within, you know, like, okay, here's the thing. If I had spoken like just a few minutes earlier, if the phone had gone through, I would not have seen my other friend who happened to be there. I would have been on the phone and probably would have just waved and said hello instead of engaging in a conversation. So I said, "Just 1 minute." I said, "There's a woman here who has gone through this." And so it was a question of talking with her, getting some contacts, and immediately putting this kid, young kid, who was OD'd and almost to the brink of death because of physical problems related to the drugs. We got him into rehab yesterday. We got him into rehab. And this all plays out. Plays out to the tune where you're meeting and you're involved in people's lives at a very, very primitive and intimate level. And to me, this is the blessing of the priesthood, that we are able to share in people's lives. Good times as well as bad times, as well as times that are plain outright evil times. But you're there. You're there. And this to me is the blessing of the priesthood. When we talk about the priesthood of Melchizedek, and we talk about the everlasting priesthood, the Jesus, the eternal priest, what was his priesthood? He was there on an intimate level with everyone, taking their pain, understanding their pain, and alleviating that pain. And in a sense, as priests, that's what we get to do. I wish it was easier. I wish we could touch people and their eyes would open. But I'm very happy just to be able to be in people's lives. So back to the original question. I don't know what I would suggest except that live life. Do it and don't be scared. Take the last few minutes of today's show to celebrate with you a beautiful place, a place that I call home, and that is the United States of America. And I know you're all over the world, and you've heard about America, and you've seen about America, you've seen about it in movies and things like that. Let me tell you something, that America is fantastic. I love it. It's not perfect. And I'm making this point because just last week, as you know, in Armenia, they had elections for the prime minister. They actually, political, I think they select the prime minister. I don't know how the parliamentary system works in Armenia, specific to Armenia, but you get the idea. There was elections, general elections, and there was a lot of resentment. There was a lot of name calling. It was a very, very difficult time. And I think about this weekend is going to be the anniversary of the United States of America. The 4th of July is the date that the Declaration of Independence was signed. I am going to put a link on our show notes to the Declaration. I highly, highly recommend that you read it, that you take some time to read it. I think it is divinely, divinely inspired. It is just so beautiful. And this is not like overboard. When you think about terms, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the right to have a revolution, to go against people. There is absolutely no right for somebody to keep you in bondage. And just beautiful, beautiful words. Now, what I want to share with you is that this document, as well as what it stands for, the United States, has gone through a lot, especially the last few years, about talking about, well, it's not perfect. There's racism, there's all kinds of things. Yeah, there is. And guess what? It is the longest running democracy, 245 years exactly on this Sunday. And it's not perfect. It's not perfect. It is an experiment that is in the process. It is a process. And that's what I want to share with you, that life is not just a black and white yes or no. It is a process. You learn, you absorb, you take, you give. And when I think about the United States, 245 years and still not perfect, I have a much easier time thinking about Armenia, 30 years of independence. What are we expecting? There are people out there who are complaining. Oh, they should do this and that. It's been 30 years. Give it a break. I think before people start criticizing, what people really need to do is take a chill pill and realize that if you're not there, well, you can have your opinion, but it's not going to count. If you really want to do something, go there or just be an observer. But it doesn't make sense to criticize when everybody is trying their best to make it work. And are there bad apples? Absolutely. There's some bad people. There's some bad people with bad intentions. Okay, you're going to find that in every mix. What's the important thing is to look at it and understand that if there is no perfection after 245 years here in America, what do you expect from a 30-year-old country? This year in September, it'll be exactly 30 years since independence. You know what it would be comparable to? Well, 1776 was when the Declaration of Independence was signed in the United States, separating us from England. 1776. Let's add 30 years to that. So what was life like in the year 1806? That's right. There was slavery, definitely. Yeah, people were not equal. There were certain people, there were the haves and have-nots for sure. And there still is, right? There was intolerance. There was misunderstanding. There was graft. There were people who had and were paying off other people. In other words, it was imperfect. Okay, so you work towards perfection. Don't be scared to be part of a solution. Work towards that perfection. This week we have Gabriel Staring. He's going to be going to Armenia. I'm going to try to get an interview with him. You might remember him. Those of you who are longtime Next Step listeners in his shoes named him as the Man of the Year several years ago because of his incredible work that he's doing with refugees. Now you can look at it and you can say that, well, what did he do? There's still war, there's still genocide, there's still evil in the world. Yeah, that's right, there is. But certain people make small dents in those, and they don't go unnoticed. You too have this opportunity in life to make those dents. And some dents are big, some are smaller, but it's okay. It's part of the process. It's part of the process of growth, which we call life. Yeah, that's right. It's life. The good and the bad and trying to learn from your mistakes and making it all work. God bless America. It's 245 years since its independence. It's not perfect, but it's a great place to be. And you work towards that greatness, toward making it a better place. God bless all those countries that seek freedom and are looking for freedom. It is God-given. And when you read this Declaration of Independence, I hope you'll take some time to go through it and understand that in 1776, the ideals that they had are still very, very much part of the dream that we have.
And you know, when I was in school, we used to sing it something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountain majesties.
Before getting back to the Next Step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The Next Step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you, all of you, for all the wonderful love and support. And those notes, they go such a long way. Want to wish you the best here in the United States. This weekend is the 4th of July weekend. It's a three-day holiday. If you're going to be doing something with the family, by yourself, whatever it is, please stay safe. We had a major blow-up last night here in the Los Angeles area. And that, because of the police, they had confiscated illegal fireworks, and in detonating it, they just like blew up a huge area, including 10 officers, including 7 civilians. Of course, thank God everyone is alive, but, you know, just really shaken up, some minor injuries. But the point being, it's a bad time because people just don't know how to enjoy and stay safe. So please, if nothing else, stay safe. All right, that does it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed presenting it to you. I have some fun stuff coming up in the next few weeks. Hopefully, I'll be doing a couple interviews over this weekend that we'll be broadcasting. Next Sunday, not this Sunday, following Sunday, is one of the 5 major feasts of the Armenian Church, namely Transfiguration, and we'll have a chance to talk about it. Do check us out on the web and check out the show notes. Click on those links. They take you to cool places, okay? On behalf of the wonderful team that put today's show together, which happens to be Susie, our producer, and myself, this is Father Vazgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath cut out.
I want to test you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.
Off balloon top visits.